This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony. It takes a master magician to turn a protest against a brutally oppressive regime into a hymn of praise. But few works make that point more clearly or do it more brilliantly than the massive and politically ambiguous 11th Symphony by Dmitri Shostakovich. Shostakovich knew all about ambiguity in music and in words. He thrived, even survived by it. His precociously brilliant First Symphony, which he wrote in 1925 when he was 19, had catapulted him to stardom and made him the darling of the Soviet establishment. 11 years later, though, he had been branded, effectively if not literally, an enemy of the people when Joseph Stalin took exception to his radical and very popular opera, Lady Macbeth of Mtsensk. Shostakovich never breathed easy again. From 1935 onwards, a Soviet composer either followed the government's program or he was nothing. Art was supposed to please the people and make them comfortable with the regime in power. The last thing it was supposed to do was challenge them. Yet in 1957, Shostakovich found a way to do just that in his 11th Symphony, veiling a protest against the now post-Stalinist Soviet regime in what seemed, on the surface, to be a tribute to some of the most honored martyrs of the revolution, the victims of a massacre at the hands of the Tsar's troops in the year 1905. Every Soviet citizen knew the story. Hundreds of poverty-stricken peasants and factory workers had peaceably assembled in front of the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg to petition the Tsar for relief, only to be shot, slashed, or hacked to death by the Cossack police guarding the palace, even though, unbeknownst to the demonstrators, the Tsar himself was hundreds of miles away. The symphony was an immediate hit. Shostakovich had cannily filled the work with quotations from Russian folk songs and revolutionary hymns, most of which predated the revolution, but which would still have been familiar to his audience, thus serving a dual purpose, portraying both the martyrs of 1905 suffering under the Tsar and their comrades of 1957 suffering under Stalinism. The former would have pleased the Soviet hierarchy, while the latter would have resonated under the radar with the people at large. In the vast opening movement, Shostakovich evokes first the spacious emptiness of the square outside the Winter Palace, then the misery of the converging protesters, huddling together as they trudge through the snow, and behind it all, the growing desperation that brought them there. Widely spaced divided strings serve both as hushed foreground and as background to the tolling bells in the harp. This is the motto that recurs throughout the symphony, as if Shostakovich is asking the question, for whom does the bell toll? The ominous unease of the timpani introduces the symphony's second motto. After a sequence of chilling silences, that motto is taken up first by a trumpet, and later by a muted solo horn. It isn't until the movement has unfolded to almost the length of the Beethoven Fifth's opening allegro do we get a real melody. This is Listen, the first of the several prison songs that Shostakovich quotes. Most listeners would have been able to hear the words in their minds. The autumn night is as black as treason, black as the tyrant's conscience. Blacker than that night, a terrible vision rises from the fog. Prison. Of course, the identity of the tyrant is carefully withheld. The cellos introduce another prison song. The convict. The night is dark, try to catch the minutes, but the walls of the prison are strong, on the closed gates are two iron locks. Violins vie with flutes in another grim melody. And the huge movement ends with an extended reminiscence of the opening. A repeat of the bleak landscape that has set the scene. The second movement is still more epic, depicting first the prelude to the massacre as the huge crowds assemble, secondly the terrible event itself, and finally its immediate aftermath as thousands of unarmed men lie dead or dying in the snow. It begins with another quotation, this one taken from Bare Your Heads, one of Shostakovich's 10 poems for chorus on text by revolutionary poets. O Tsar, our little father, look around you. Life is impossible for us because of the Tsar's servants, against whom we are helpless. Confusion reigns as the peasants mill about, and the movement takes some time to get going. But when it does, it moves with unstoppable force, eventually bringing in the entire orchestra. The trumpet theme returns to herald the Cossacks, who arrive in ever greater numbers to the sound of a grimly determined fugue. The music of the massacre itself is meant to shock us, and it does, with violent cross rhythms and searing discords. Underpinned by the timpani's three-note motto from the start of the first movement, the opening Palace Square music returns, wildly distorted, and erupts into a terrifying climax, intensified by another impassioned quotation, again from Bare Your Heads. Bare your heads. On this mournful day, the shadow of a long night passed over the earth. Fallen was the slavish faith in the Tsar as father, and a new dawn flared up for our homeland. The tumult eventually subsides, and the movement ends with another invocation of the eerie adagio with which the symphony began. The third movement, Eternal Memory, is at one level a requiem for the fallen on that notorious Bloody Sunday, but it could also be understood as a requiem for the hopes of the Russian people, who had lived under Tsarist rule for many centuries and who had continued to suffer under Soviet rule. The violas introduce the main theme, another quotation, this time from the so-called Proletarian Requiem, the song You Fell as Sacrifice. There are more quotations in the middle section, as two more revolutionary songs lead to the inspirational Hail Free Word of Liberty. This in turn leads with ever-mounting tension to a climactic return of Bare Your Heads. Rousingly intoned by the entire orchestra, before the movement subsides, and and ends with a fleeting reminder of the proletarian requiem. Politically speaking, Shostakovich was skating on even thinner ice in the finale, with its implication that while the protesters of 1905 might have fallen, the circumstances that had inspired them lived on. Once again, he appears to wave the banner of the loyal party man by quoting revolutionary songs. But, as in the rest of the symphony, Shostakovich quotes, yet does not quote. The melodies may have lost their words, but not their associations. The movement may begin with a funeral march, but its unstoppable rhythm gives it enormous power, as many of the songs invoked in earlier movements return in a great climax. Bare Your Heads combines with the Palace Square music, followed by a sudden return to the bleak adagio of the opening. The adagio eventually gives way to the hymn, O Tsar, Our Little Father. Returning first and somewhat ominously on bass clarinet, and the work reaches a resounding final climax that defies anyone, in or out of the Politburo, to sit on his hands. However correct and specific Shostakovich was with the work's program, his Symphony No. 11 is a work shot through with ambiguities from beginning to end. 1905 may be the year in the title, but the work was composed and premiered in the aftermath of the Soviet suppression of the Hungarian uprising in 1956, which claimed some 20,000 lives. As the musicologist Lev Lebedinsky put it, what we heard in this music was not the police firing on the crowd in front of the Winter Palace in 1905, but the Soviet tanks roaring through the streets of Budapest. This was so clear to, as Shostakovich put it, those who had ears to listen, that his son whispered to him during the dress rehearsal, "Papa, what if they hang you for this?" This is Rick Malone for the San Francisco Symphony.